Hi, it's Karen Webster, and with me today is Rich Aberman, the co-founder and chief strategy officer at WePay. Rich, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Karen. Glad to be here.
And Happy New Year to you. I hope you had a little downtime over the holidays and are ready and raring to go for an action-packed year.
Thank you. You too. And I am, for sure.
So the topic of conversation, it's certainly one we've had before many times. It is your business and it is about integrated payments. But I wanted to take a particular focus today, maybe take us a little bit past the buzzword that integrated payments has become, to get your impressions and an understanding of where you see the most traction happening today. Clearly, there's a lot of benefit for embedding payments into the transaction flow of platform businesses on so many different levels, from the small business side to their end customer side to, of course, the platform itself. But where do you see the traction happening today? Where's the interest?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think there's a variety of verticals that have been on this train for a long time and have kind of crossed the chasm in terms of reaching critical mass. So like retail is a classic example, obvious example, where it's, you know, retailers are now selling online and in person. And so payments is embedded into the e-commerce software that they're using to run their online stores. That's kind of non-exciting and non-disputable at this point. So like clearly a lot of traction in e-commerce. I think some other more peripheral ones, so like online accounting and invoicing, especially for small businesses and service providers that are now, you know, managing their books in the cloud, as opposed to, you know, buying desktop accounting software, are increasingly getting comfortable, you know, enabling those invoices to be paid with credit card online. And last but not least, just marketplaces. So eBay being kind of the original, but now all kinds of marketplaces, from specialty retail to service marketplaces like Uber, Airbnb, et cetera. It's kind of par for the course that they're going to have payments embedded into the native experience of using those platforms. So in terms of like where's the foundation, you know, retail, kind of online accounting, invoicing, and marketplaces, it's no longer exciting to talk about online payments in those categories because it's already there, mm-hmm. And will continue to evolve and do so. I think where we're seeing kind of net new progress for kind of electronic payments embedded into software is in more traditional industries, where maybe credit card payments historically haven't had deep penetration, but are increasingly getting penetration because it's being enabled through software to be delivered at a lower cost and with greater value. I've used an example in the past around Uber, where, you know, historically taxi drivers didn't accept credit cards. And now, because it's embedded into the software that, you know, these micro businesses are using to run and manage their operations, there is penetration into that vertical. I think you see similar examples in like government, education, healthcare, construction, property management, where those industries have historically have not been terribly tech enabled. You know, there's been a lot of kind of pen and paper management of the operations associated with those verticals. But as software kind of eats those businesses and they're increasingly dependent on software platforms to kind of manage both front and back office operations, payments have been able to draft on that to get deeper penetration into verticals that maybe historically have been a little bit slower to adopt or adverse to some of the mechanics of credit card payments and other forms of electronic payments.
Rich, what's your take on these large enterprise businesses that are predominantly brick and mortar, making investments, outright acquisitions of software platforms, IKEA, TaskRabbit, and you see hoteliers buying adjacent platforms like Wyndham buying these home exchange platforms like Love Home Swap? What's driving that? Is it wanting to get on the software platform bandwagon?
Yeah, totally. I would frame it slightly differently. I guess I'd put it in two categories. The first is, I think for a lot of these kind of larger enterprises and kind of big retailers, you know, they're constantly looking for ways to more deeply engage their customer base. And so there's kind of a universe of peripheral value or activities that they know their customers engage in outside of just purchasing, you know, a dresser or a bed at IKEA that IKEA wants to tap into, you know, call it customer intimacy. And I mean, just using the TaskRabbit IKEA example, like I'd venture to say that a pretty significant portion of TaskRabbits being hired are being hired to put together IKEA shit. Right? Like, certainly from personal experiences, like when I would hire a TaskRabbit, 9 times out of 10, it was because I bought something on IKEA that just didn't want to pallet having to put it together myself. And so I think IKEA recognizes that and says, look, like that's owning that experience is not existential to IKEA. It might not allow them to double or triple their revenue in the near term. But I think as they think about ways to more deeply engage their customers throughout a greater piece of the transaction, not just at the point of sale when that dresser is being purchased, but in the exploration phase when you're thinking about whether you need a dresser and what kind of dresser to buy, and once you buy it, how do you assemble it? I think they recognize that, you know, the more present they are throughout that entire life cycle, the better business they're going to have in the long term. Another example, and this is a few years ago now, but like, you know, Home Depot bought Red Beacon. So, you know, say some percentage of homeowners walking into Home Depot to buy things for home improvement stuff are also looking for service providers to help them with, you know, the installation, et cetera, of that. And so to the extent Home Depot can kind of own that part of the experience as well by sourcing and connecting with those service providers, Home Depot is providing a more valuable service and creates additional touch points with their customers. So I think that's kind of one category. It's just it gives them an opportunity to create more touch points with their customers, greater customer intimacy, and more value throughout the life cycle of you know, the purchase, both before and after the actual transaction. And I think the second is just that consumer behavior is evolving. You know, like, I guess Internet 1.0 is when, you know, these major retailers had a website and, like, you'd be able to purchase things online. But I think that's evolving pretty dramatically. Like, the way people are purchasing things online now is not just going to a destination website like Walmart.com or IKEA.com and purchasing something, but it's contextual. You know, it's through your you know, Alexa Echo in your kitchen. It's through Facebook. It's through a marketplace that's bringing together a variety of different retailers within a niche. And so I think a lot of the kind of big box retailers are worried that over a long enough time period, as consumer behavior evolves, it could really reduce their relevance. And so I think they just want to be ahead of that curve and make sure their businesses are evolving as well.
Rich, you mentioned contextual commerce and these opportunities for consumers and businesses, frankly, to tap into an opportunity to make a purchase or initiate a transaction in the moment. And so we're seeing headlines all over the place about cars and connected cars, wearables, and so many different devices that provide those opportunities. How does that sync with integrated payments and how you see the world?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think when I say contextual commerce, for me, it's really about two things. You know, one is the context of the purchase decision. So, you know, as you're thinking about what dresser you should buy, how do you engage that consumer at that point versus when they made the decision they're going to buy a dresser and they're going to go to IKEA.com? You know, is it when they're perusing Pinterest? Is it, you know, is it when they're in their car thinking about it? You know, how do you just make sure that you're where that consumer is when they're first starting their journey of making a purchase decision. Mm-hmm. And that could be, you know, there's a million different ways you can cut that. That could be when you're in your online bank paying your credit card bill and you recognize you're spending a lot of money at Starbucks and you could save money by getting rewards through your credit card company, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how do they hit you at that point when, mm-hmm. when they have your attention? And the second is convenience. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you remove as much friction as possible from that purchase, from that transaction, so that the minute they make the purchase decision to the time that the transaction is complete is as minimized as possible. And that context and that convenience is the core value proposition of software platforms. Mm-hmm. It's small businesses are using software to grow faster and to run better. And to the extent those software platforms are easy to use and provide broader context around the transaction, the more valuable they're going to be to both that business and the consumers that are transacting with it. So software platforms provide context, you know, with Airbnb. It's, you know, is this a trusted homeowner? How many bookings have they had? And it removes friction because I no longer have the anxiety around that purchase decision because I have trust and safety and I can check out in one click. And I know that that will reserve that date on the calendar and that homeowner will be prepared to receive me. And there's a million other examples like that. Totally other end of the spectrum is like QuickBooks Online. You know, I'm a small business. I send an invoice. You know, that invoice is attached to a specific customer. When it's paid, automatically that updates my receivables and my accounting, which makes it easy to file taxes at the end of the year. So it's not just a credit card transaction for a dollar amount. It's a credit card transaction tied to a specific customer, a specific item in your inventory, a specific project, you know, a specific route on a cab ride. And that context, plus the convenience of making payments kind of seamless and instant, is valuable. And I don't really see a difference in spirit between that and what I'm calling contextual commerce.
Mm-hmm. So context and convenience, obviously major forces that are driving the demand from the small business perspective and their end user's perspective for integrated payments inside of these software platforms. But are there other larger, more macro forces that you think are shaping the demand for this kind of capability?
Give me an example of what you would mean by macro forces, and I'll dig into it.
Are there changes in the way businesses and industries are being formed and reshaped because of these software platforms? Are you seeing more opportunities for businesses, for example, that may be thinking about reallocation of workforce full-time versus gig workers and therefore more of a reliance on these software platforms to acquire services that might once have been something they brought inside? Just trying to think about the kinds of demands that perhaps these software platforms are responding to that would therefore then make the prospect of integrated payments more attractive and certainly more valuable.
Totally. Yeah, that's helpful. And I think I understand what you're getting at. So I guess I struggle between, I don't know what's a cause or what's an effect of these software platforms. So are they a result of some of these macro trends, or are they driving some of them? Mm-hmm. But I can give examples of what I think are kind of macro trends that are either a cause or an effect. Mm-hmm. One is just automation, mm-hmm. right? So like, if you look at the kind of H1, or the, you know, the high level marketing pitch of a lot of these software platforms, it basically comes down to spend more time doing what you love to do and perfecting your craft, and less time managing the mundane, right? So if it's like property management software, it's like less time chasing down tenants and dealing with issues and more time growing your business. Mm-hmm. Or if it's, you know, restaurant POS software, it's, you know, spend less time, you know, with pen and paper and more time talking to customers. And so, you know, I think one thing that these software platforms enable you to do is automate a lot of the kind of back office workflows that are required just to kind of maintain your business.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned the example before of like, you know, historically when you wanted to manage receivables, you know, there was somebody that would invoice a customer, that would interact with that customer to make sure they pay it. When it was paid, they would then reconcile that incoming payment with the outstanding receivable that they had and mark that project as complete, et cetera, et cetera. Like all of that is being automated through software. So you know, trigger an event by sending an invoice, and everything else kind of just magically happens thereafter. That's kind of one tactical example, but I think just this idea that software is automating more and more, not just for large businesses and large enterprises, but also for small businesses mm-hmm. as well. Like I keep going back to the Uber example because I think it's just such a strong one. Like if you wanted to start, let's say, a small taxi business 5 years ago, think about what it would take to do that, mm-hmm. right? You got to market and find customers. Mm-hmm. You have to, you have to think about payroll for your people. There's just so much that would go into building a small taxi business. Now you sign up for Uber and like all of that is kind of done for you through the software mm-hmm. automatically.
Mm-hmm.
Even what you charge your customers is mm-hmm. adjusting in real time as demand increases.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second, so there's kind of automation. The second is just more data is available. Like as more and more businesses run on software and payments are coming through that software, you can identify trends and get visibility into things that might otherwise have been pretty onerous to get visibility into. So like, who are my best customers? Right? That's such an obvious question that you would ask as a business, big and small, but might not be easy to answer in certain contexts. It's very, very easy if you're an e-commerce retailer that is accepting electronic payments that asks people to log in order to check out. Or maybe they don't even need to log in. Maybe you just cookie their machine. So just this idea that like as more and more goes digital through software and payments and otherwise, there's just more data available. And I think last but not least, like to the extent you can leverage that data and allow the software to perform kind of activities for you, there's a lot of like value that you can unlock. So you can reward your best customers, right? Like you don't need to say, who are my best customers? Go through great pain to figure it out, mm-hmm. figure out how then you can leverage that data in order to create more loyalty. That kind of is automated through software more and more, right? Your best customers automatically get discounts. They're automatically sent engagement emails, letting them know of when your next sale is coming up. Even tactical things like fighting chargebacks. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, one of the things that small businesses realize very quickly when they go from only accepting cash and checks to accepting credit card payments is that the money's not really your money when the consumer always has a right to dispute the charge. Mm-hmm. And then every small business goes through the learning curve of figuring out how to avoid chargebacks and how to fight them. The reality is that can be automated, right? The software that you're using mm-hmm. to run your e-commerce business has all the data it needs and all the context it needs to understand why that chargeback came in and whether it makes sense to fight it. And if so, the actual legwork associated with disputing it. So I'm kind of dragging on a little bit, but I would say like the two biggest ones that we just see is like mm-hmm. increased automation, the increased availability of data, and the increased ability to leverage that data to actually create real value.
Yeah, and I think what you're seeing a lot of these platforms do is identify areas where they can actually do that do enable small businesses and certainly large businesses too to identify opportunities to reconfigure the way they do business on almost every level. So I think that's I don't know whether that's a cause or an effect, but I think that's certainly something that we're observing in the market for sure.
Yeah, I think it's both. Like I guess on some level, businesses are looking for ways to, I guess every business, big or small, wants to reduce costs, you know, through efficiency or whatever, and increase revenue. And so the way that software does that is they help you automate tasks, they help you collect more data and leverage it. And by doing so, I think they're creating more demand of small businesses to take advantage of those trends.
So we started the conversation. I referenced integrated payments as being a real buzzword. And I think it's beyond a buzzword. It is something that quite a number of of organizations say that they enable, they offer to software platforms. So I guess a question that I'll leave you with, but not before you answer it, is does everyone who uses those words really offer integrated payments, and how can you tell?
Yeah, so I guess it's a good question. At a base level, what we and I think other providers mean by integrated payments is simply that the software platforms themselves are able to support those payment providers for those businesses. And what I mean by that is when I sign up for a new accounting platform or a new invoicing platform, I'm able to use that platform to accept credit card payments or other forms of electronic payments. And the software providers that claim to support integrated payments are basically saying that their payment service can be integrated into various different software packages. Mm-hmm. So I think that's fair. Most providers today, it's hard to be a payment provider without being able to integrate that payment service into software. So I think we've all kind of converged on that saying integrated payments is no different at this point than just saying payments. Like mm-hmm. all payments eventually will be integrated into some software in one way or another. Mm-hmm. I guess what we mean by it is a few things. The first is how deeply embedded is that payment experience into the software itself? Does it feel native? And does the merchant feel like they're using a turnkey solution to run their business? Or does it feel like they have two very disjoint relationships, one with their software provider and one with their payment provider? And I think that's where we focused a lot of time. How do we make sure that our software partners are able to so deeply embed payments into the native experience that they're trying to create that payments feels frictionless? It just kind of happens magically simply by virtue of using the software to run your business. And I think from there, it's what other value can that unlock for the business using that software platform? One example is what we brought up before, just around increased automation. Once electronic payments are coming through the software, what other workflows can they automate? They can basically update your accounting automatically. They can send an email to the consumer that just paid you, thanking them and, promoting your other product offerings that they can purchase. The conclusion that we're increasingly coming to is we and our competitors, whether it's PayPal, Stripe, Braintree, Adyen, more traditional players like Auth.net, et cetera, all of us are converging on the idea that payments are best delivered through software platforms, which can increase the value and decrease the friction and cost associated with it. I think we're all either there or we'll get there soon around instant onboarding, low and transparent pricing. So really the question for us, WePay now a part of Chase, is what comes next? Where do we go to further differentiate and to add more value to our software partners and the small businesses that they serve? And I think ultimately it comes down to two things. One is, what other services does payments ultimately unlock that have synergy when delivered in conjunction with payments? Just a classic example, and I think some of our competitors have already gotten there by offering capital. Square, PayPal now offer credit, working capital to small businesses, because once you have their payments business, you can make a decision about issuing a loan and make it easy to deliver that service because you already have their bank account on file, you've already verified their identity, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the first is just broader financial services where payments is kind of the on-ramp and where payments and those financial services brought to the table together is better than being sold individually. And allowing that to be kind of delivered through and serviced by the software platforms that they're already using to manage the business. And the second is, how do you create a virtuous cycle between the software platforms that are ultimately acquiring and servicing small businesses as kind of an acquisition engine for WePay and Chase to, Chase has a huge network of 5,100 bank branches and you know, web properties, the billions of impressions a month, how do we leverage that to actually send the small businesses that we have touch points to the software platforms that are best equipped to help them grow and manage their operations? And I think that's kind of how we're looking at the future. Integrated payments, I think we're at the forefront, and we're driving, you know, huge improvements in customer experience and allowing our partners to drive more revenue. But I think, like traditional payments, that will get increasingly commoditized as all of us converge on the same strategy. Mm-hmm. How do we then look at additional ways that we could provide value to our partners and their end users?
So it's about the ecosystem.
That's right.
That sounds like a great conversation for our next conversation. So why don't we do that, but wrap up today's discussion, which I found, you know, really interesting. It was great to get your perspective, Rich, as always, on where you see the opportunities today, where you see it going. And then specifically, I love the way you frame the what's next, not only for integrated payments, but for you guys, now that you have a whole different set of assets that you can tap into as part of Chase to create the ecosystem that you described. It was great. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Karen.